Got it. Okay. I have to got it, I guess. Okay. This is Barbara E. from New Jersey, a volume compulsive overeater. I am not new to Overeaters Anonymous. I've been in Overeaters Anonymous for 2 decades now, but I've struggled with weight all of my life. I came out of the chute right from my mommy wanting to eat with a desire to eat more and more. And I'll tell you a humorous story. I hope it's not offensive to any of you. When I was 3 years old, I wandered into my mother's bathroom. She had a little closet close to the floor in her bathroom. And I found what looked like a chocolate bar. So I opened it and ate it. She didn't keep chocolate bars in her bathroom. It was a box of Ex-Lax. You may remember Ex-Lax. It's a laxative. And poor little three-year-old Barbara had a shitty day the next day. And things got even worse. I would eat, I don't know if any of you remember the candy, AYDS. It wasn't candy. It was supposed to curb your desire to eat. To me, it tasted like caramel. So I ate the whole box and then I ate some more. I ate until I was satiated. When the food was up to here, I'd lie down on the bed and wait. And once it settled, I'd go down in the kitchen and eat more. When I was in elementary school, my mother took me to the Chubbett shop at Lord and Taylor's in Manhattan. The Chubbett shop was for children who were a bit chubby. I wasn't obese at that time, but I grew into it. By the time I was led into OA, and that took me quite a few decades, I had gained and lost 100 pounds 9 times. I had gone from a size 2 to a size 24. I wore washcloths around my thighs because they were rubbed raw, and sweat shields under my arms because I perspired day and night. And I used to joke, but I'm telling you, it was no joke. I only ate one meal a day. It just lasted for 24 hours because I was a ninja binger too. I came down in the middle of the night and I prayed in front of my refrigerator. I said, "Refrigerator, tell me what I can eat." And my refrigerator would say in a snarky voice, the light was always on there, so I knew it was my higher power. It would say, "Eat anything you want, Barbara. And remember, your two best friends are next door in the freezer. Their names are Ben and Jerry's." And that's what I did. I went down in the middle of the night and I ate and I ate and I ate. And my husband was concerned. My children were scared to death. My administrator where I taught was concerned because we would have lunch hour and I would go out and come back late and leave my little fourth graders alone because I was cruising like a shark for food. And I would get, when my husband wasn't home, pizza boxes and eat the pizza and then put the box in my neighbor's garbage pail so my husband wouldn't see it. And one more awful incident I'm going to share with you. When my husband and my children were out, I would make a pound of pasta and bring it upstairs in a pot and eat it straight out of the pot. And one night my husband came home and I didn't know what to do. There was my pot of spaghetti. I'm sorry, I think I might have said pizza. My pot of spaghetti up in the bedroom. So I threw the pot of spaghetti into the toilet and flushed it. And it vomited up all the spaghetti all over the floor. And when my husband said home, he said, "Barbara, you got a lot of explaining to do." Well, there was no way I could explain myself out of that debacle. So I binged my way through college. I binged my way through my early motherhood periods. My children suffered because they too suffered from poor body images, because I was always either going on the wagon, meaning I was going to make a promise I would only eat till midnight and then stop. And then, of course, I'd go right on eating. Or I would say, I'll stop on Monday. Everyone knows Monday is not diet Monday, diet day, but I never stopped on Monday. I was on that carousel reaching for the brass ring, but I could never reach it. And then this God that I didn't know was there, because I wasn't an atheist, because then I'd be sure there was no God, but I was an agnostic. I didn't know there was a God. And if he was there, I didn't know what he was doing for me, because he wasn't helping me with my problem. But he did, when a neighbor who I met while we were having mammograms said, you know, Barbara, I'm going to a new meeting. It's called Overeaters Anonymous. Would you like to go? And I said, sure, I'll go with you sometime. And she said, great, I'll pick you up tonight. And I said, what? Tonight? I've got a few more food that I want to eat, I want to try. But I went with her anyway. And I heard that there was a three-legged stool. I needed to be evolved emotionally, spiritually, and physically. And I didn't want to be evolved emotionally or spiritually. I just wanted to lose the weight. I wanted to get out of Lane Bryant's and go to a regular store and buy regular clothes, not clothes that I thought would hide my weight, but it never did. So I went to the meeting skeptical. Yes, I was skeptical, but did I set my timer? Yes, I did. Oh, yay me. Good. I set my timer. Kudos to me. I went to some meetings at Overeaters Anonymous. It was a newcomers meeting. Fancy that. And we only spoke positivity. We didn't speak honestly at that time about our relapses. We spoke about step one. We said, if you walked in the door, well, you know you're a compulsive overeater. And then we did all the tools. There were only seven at the time. Then they got two more. One of them was an action plan, and that scared the heck out of me, because I am spiritually and emotionally against any kind of action. I'm lazy. I like to read books. I like to eat, but I learned that I couldn't just eat what I wanted. So my sponsor that I reluctantly got, no, that's not true. I lie. I gratefully got, because I had gone to Weight Watchers, lost all my weight, and then ate between meetings. And then if I gained weight, I wouldn't go back again. And then I went to another pay and weight program and lost all the weight and gained all of it back. And I went to a psychologist who put me on a crazy food plan, and I gained all the weight after I'd lost it all again. So I got a sponsor, and she said, put down the foods that you think you would run to if you were angry, lonely, tired, bored, or you just wanted to eat. And I said, well, I'd never run to a stalk of celery. I'd run to a cookie. I'd run to ice cream. I'd run to something sweet or something salty. But you wouldn't see me running to a green pepper. That's not the way I roll. So she said, make a list of all the things that you would run to if you were feeling like you just wanted to eat and you had a case of the buckets. Oh, I'm sorry, this is being recorded, but I'm old, I can say a few words like that here. Anyway, I just wanted to let you know that I stayed for six meetings and six meetings more. And they always said, if you're miserable, we'll refund your misery. I wish I had pictures to show you of me in my size 24, because the photographer that took our staff photos, I think, was a sadist. He always put me at the end of the row so you could see me in my size 24 jackets and my orthopedic shoes. And then when I got thinner, he put me in the middle. So maybe he was a sadist. But anyway, I wanted to be serious with you and share that, as I said, I've struggled with weight issues all my life, and I actively look for binge buddies in New York. I don't know if you ever lived in Manhattan and other places, I'm told. They had a place called Horn and Hard Art. When you went in there, you exchanged your money for coins, and you could put the coin inside into a window and it would open, and magically you could take out anything you want. I would always take out things that were sweet and creamy, or anything that, or even spicy, anything. And I didn't realize it, but I was doing that poor girl a disservice by encouraging her to go to Horn and Hard Art with me. But as I said, everyone in my family was concerned, and I was always feeling inferior or superior. I wanted to control everyone. So on my OA journey, I'm going to switch now from all the things I did, because I see your time is valuable. I found I'm responsible for what I say. I'm not responsible for how you interpret it. And when I ignore my need for recovery, I go into states of self-delusion, self-isolation, superiority or inferiority. When I sit in the truth, when I admit I need help and support and work all the 9 tools and all the steps, when I sit and admit and humble myself and surrender the sword, and throw it down and say, I'm through. I can't do it. I was wrong. Will you help me? I need help. That's when my higher power comes to me. And when I was young, my piano teacher said, did I want to get better? And I said, yes. And she said, well, you have to practice. You have to practice. And that's what I had to do. I had to practice using every tool every single day. I make 3 phone calls a day, one right after breakfast to a random member. And I say, I'm making you my sweet breakfast dessert call. And I do the same thing after lunch and same thing after dinner. And if I get a call from you, I will always answer your call. And if I'm not available, I'll call you back. Unless you called on a landline, and then I won't have your phone. So please, if you want to call me, do call me on a cell phone. And I promise, when I listen to you, I learn. And I was told I had to turn this whole business over to someone else. So that's what I had to do. And I struggle for opportunities for growth. And I learn how to interact with others in a kinder, gentler way. I've had to stop controlling other people or manipulating them to get what I want. And I had to stop complaining, oh, woe is me, I don't have another meal coming, and be grateful for the food I have, because there are starving people in the world. And I had to stop judging myself as less than. If I make a mistake, I'm not a mistake. It's a life lesson, not a loss. It's a detour, not a dead end. And I have to listen with a loving heart to other people when they call me, and not try to give them advice, and not try to fix anyone. Because if I could fix someone, I wouldn't be here with you today. I would have recovered from this killer disease a long time ago. And I do have to tell you, honestly, I think this is a killing disease. It wants me dead or hurting. And it's not enough for me just to be willing to do it. I have to take action after action after action and do it every single day. They say wash, rinse, and repeat. I don't know if you remember the movie Groundhog Day. I wake up every day an addict all over again, with a desire to eat and eat. But if I'm lucky, I go to bed recovered every day, and I do a nightly review. How did I do today? And I ask myself some questions. What did I do for myself that amazed me? What did I do for myself with no expectation of reward? Did I give myself some quiet time? Did I plant a flower? Did I plant a seed? And that's what I hope I've planted with you, a little seed. And maybe you're not ready to hear my message, but perhaps in the future you will. And I know there are people on this struggle bus with me who are recovering, who are in relapse, who are recovered, who are here to pass the message on. And I appreciate you all, because together we can do better. And in step one, I face reality. I'm not able to control what I do and I say, and that has serious consequences. And in step two, I understand that I can't force change through willpower. I need to untangle my life patiently and with love. And in step three, I take a mindful pause to deal with life calmly and effectively, and understand I need a power greater than me to keep me moving forward. And I understand that some days will be diamonds, but others will be stones. And if I'm caught in the riptide, I have to swim with the riptide, not force myself against it. And in step four, I examine my life with honesty and search for patterns and how I've been reacting to people and situations. And in step five, I explore them with another person honestly and listen to her speaking with compassionate, non-judgmental way. And in step six, I understand how these patterns have been my ways of coping with my fears of not being good enough, my fears of being invisible, my fears of regaining my weight. And in step eight, I explore alternate behaviors and rehearse them in a safe setting with my sponsor. And in step nine, I apply these new patterns in my everyday life as best I can. And I sincerely apologize to people specifically for how I've wronged them and how I plan to remediate the harm. And then I ask them, is there something else they'd like to add? Some other way I've injured them or harmed them, and how I can possibly fix it. And then in step 10, I pay attention to the causes and effects of my actions by doing spot check inventories throughout my day. And forgiveness lightens my heart a bit. And in step seven, I make space in my day for mindful reflection, a sense of meaning and purpose that naturally arises from that. And I always list my gratitudes to, what am I grateful for? Instead of bemoaning the fact that I don't have shoes, I'm grateful that I have a pair of shoes. And in step 12, I've tried to live my life with a sense of respect and compassion for myself and others. And I do my best to pass this message on with others who are struggling through sponsorship, phone calls, service, using all the tools and all the steps and all the principles that I've learned, and as I trudge the road with others who understand and accept me, and with gratitude that I'll never be through with this OA journey. There's no graduation day. If I ever think it's time for me to get off the bus and say, I'm through, I'm recovered now, I'll go right back into relapse. And I'd like to just take a moment to speak to those of you. Honestly, I'm not the same age I was at 50. I'm not doing the same physical things I'm doing. I'm certainly not the age I was at 60 or doing the exercise I was doing. I have two repaired hips, one repaired knee. I fell down a flight of stairs and fortunately didn't break anything, but had to go to rehab for all of these things. I even have a pacemaker to keep my heart in pace with all of you. So what am I trying to do? I know I can't eat the same way I ate when I was 50 or even 60. I have to monitor and scale back the amount of food I can eat. And I don't want to do it. I'm happy. Any luxury I've had for a week becomes just an opportunity. So I have to do it with gratitude and say, yes, I'm going to work it through with a nutritionist and with my sponsor and see what I can bemoan and not bemoan it, but be grateful that I have this program and I can live it one day at a time with you. And I think that's really all I want to say. I have 8 minutes more, but I'd love to hear from all of you. So I will turn my timer off, and I did it, and turn it right back over to you. And welcome to Selena and to David and to anyone who's new to this meeting. Welcome, welcome, welcome.